Boris Johnson, the frontrunner to replace Theresa May as the next British Prime Minister, is threatening that if he gets into Downing Street, he'd consider freezing almost $50 billion owed to the European Union as leverage to renegotiate Brexit. The money represents outstanding commitments that the country has already made with the EU. As an EU member, Britain has a role in everything from infrastructure projects to scientific research in the bloc.
Retailers like Walmart, Amazon and Kroger have been delivering groceries to homes, but now Walmart is taking it one big step further, going into your home to stock your fridge. So no more worries about that milk souring on your doorstep while you're out of the house. Customers order groceries online. A Walmart associate does the shopping, then goes from the food aisle to your fridge. The associate will use smart entry technology to enter the home and wear a body camera so customers can control access to their homes and watch the delivery being made on their mobile devices.
Shares of Beyond Meat surged as much as 36% Friday. Investors hungrily responded to the alternative meat company's first quarterly earnings report since its Wall Street debut. The company, now worth $7.5 billion on Wall Street, that's more than motorcycle company Harley-Davidson, travel website TripAdvisor, and humbled department store giant Macy's.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's June 10th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business week and business day getting underway. We appreciate your business this morning and listening in on our program. We put together a good one for you for this Monday morning. Melissa Kaufman is here waiting in the PPG Paints Green Room to join us for our conversation. She's the executive director of The Garage at Northwestern University, a startup location, almost like an incubator of sorts for students at Northwestern. And Melissa will join us in our first segment this morning. We'll get to that momentarily. A little bit later this morning, you've probably seen or heard about something called deep fake videos. They are threatening to impact the upcoming election for president in the United States in a big way. Edward Delp will be her director of video and image processing at Purdue University. They have a laboratory there where they've been studying this. And some of their findings will surprise you. We'll do that at about 5:38 this morning. We begin, though, first on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after Wall Street wrapped up the best week of the year on Friday. At the closing bell, the Dow Jones was up nearly 263 points. The Nasdaq jumped 127. The S&P was up nearly 30 points. The other big news of the week was the May jobs report. 75,000 new jobs created was less than half of what was expected. The numbers did raise a great deal of speculation of a possible interest rate cut by the Federal Reserve coming up. This morning, as we look at the futures market, Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures all up about a third this morning each. Dow futures are up 97 points. In Europe, markets are all in the green as well. In Europe, in London, Germany, and France up nearly a half a percent, quarter of a percent to a half a percent in London, a quarter of a percent in France, nearly three quarters of a percent in Germany. And in Asia this morning, the Nikkei up nearly 249 points, nearly a percent and quarter higher in Hong Kong, higher by nearly two and a quarter. Shanghai up nearly three quarters of a percent. And in oil in the United States, $54.05 a barrel, which is up just about 6 cents. We begin this morning with a couple of big stories. United Technologies and Raytheon are merging to create an aerospace and defense powerhouse. Companies are calling it a merger of equals, with the new company being an equal combination of shares between the two companies. The new company will also be a combination of the two names, Raytheon Technology Corporation. The merger will allow the company to offer expanded technology and research capabilities. United Technologies Chairman and CEO Greg Hayes says it will define the future of aerospace and defense. FedEx is dropping its express delivery contract with Amazon. FedEx announced late last week it won't renew the contract to handle air service for the online retail powerhouse. The shipping giant says it's a strategic decision as FedEx focuses on serving what it calls the broader e-commerce market. The decision comes as Amazon is expanding its own delivery system, contracting for cargo planes and trucks. Amazon Prime Air is based near Cincinnati and uses Amazon-branded planes flown by four companies. Last month, Amazon broke ground in that area on an air hub that's scheduled to open in 2021. And this is only the air delivery service impacted with FedEx. FedEx says it will still continue to be that last mile delivery service when needed for Amazon. We begin this morning front and center with our CEO spotlight. Melissa Kaufman is here, executive director of The Garage at Northwestern University. Melissa, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're very happy to have you this morning. We've wanted to do a segment on The Garage for a while. And I know we've mentioned it in some of the segments we've done, and we've talked to some of the students before, but I wanted to bring you in to talk about it just generally, what it is. Tell our audience what it is and what you do there.
Yeah, so The Garage is almost 4 years old this summer. We are a space and community at Northwestern University for students that are interested in entrepreneurship and innovation.
Is it too generalistic to call it an incubator, or is that sort of what it would be like in the real outside of the education world?
Incubation is part of what we do. I think of an incubator as a space where startups come together and set up an office space, so that is part of what we do. But our program's a little bit broader than that, in that we also have a classroom space for teaching and kind of a casual hangout spot that any student at Northwestern can come hang out and work on their ideas.
When I think of the name, The Garage, I think of all of the tech gurus who've started things in their garage. That's probably not where it comes from, is it, or is it?
It's a little bit of a double play on words. So we are in the North Campus parking garage. So okay, we're tucked into the second floor, and there's six stories of parking above us. So we are in a garage, but it is also kind of a nod to the Googles and HPs of the world that did start in a garage.
Yeah. So talk to us about the students that you come through the doors there. What kind of student thrives in that environment, and talk to us a little bit about the entrepreneurial spirit that these kids have, even in college.
Yeah, I believe it's something that every student should participate in while they're in school to some degree. I don't think every student necessarily needs to launch a company or a startup, but just getting exposed to an innovative environment is a really important skill set for the modern workplace in general. We work with everything from undergraduate freshmen to Kellogg MBA students to PhD students. As long as you're a currently enrolled student at Northwestern, we have programming for you.
I want to continue talking a little bit about the student entrepreneurs, but I want to talk a little bit more about you. Talk to us a little bit about your background. You have not only are you at Northwestern at The Garage, but you're involved with the Mayor's Technology Council. You're with Chicago Ventures. You have a broad background in this field, in this area.
I never would have thought that I was someone that would end up in academia. So my background before this, I studied computer science in college, and I thought that was the last time I would ever step on a college campus. I loved working in industry. I worked at IBM. I worked at Google and YouTube, a number of consumer technology companies out in California. I started my own company in San Francisco. But when I moved to Chicago, I was really fortunate to get set up with The Garage right as they were opening. So for me, it was really an entrepreneurial opportunity to build something new inside of a large institution, which is really exciting.
What was the deciding factor for you? Was it something that just the idea of being in on the ground floor of something like that, or did you see something else?
For me, it was pretty personal. So I was really interested in entrepreneurship when I was a college student, but there was no space or community that I could go to learn more or to work on my own ideas. So I've really been driven by the fact that what we've built at Northwestern is what I wish I had had when I was a college student, and just based on what I've seen out in industry, bringing that all together in one place and kind of bringing that innovative spirit and dropping it down in a place like Evanston has been a really exciting experiment to see what happens. Like, can you create that Silicon Valley whimsy in a place like Evanston? And the answer is yes.
Yeah, and because it's adjacent to Chicago, which really feels like Silicon Valley 2.0, doesn't it? It kind of feels like we have that spirit here.
Yeah, I particularly feel it when I'm walking around in the West Loop, just seeing the tech companies that are springing up and the co-working spaces and the millennials and Gen Zers walking around. I feel like we're in Silicon Valley, but just maybe a past version of it, which makes me think that this is kind of an early ecosystem for tech.
That's interesting, an early ecosystem. So we have great things ahead of us then, if that's the case.
I think so.
Yeah. Back to The Garage. Let's talk a little bit about the entrepreneurs, the students, the ideas that come through there. You talked about how well it's going, and that's sort of borne out by the startups that we see, the kids' ideas, the students' ideas. You just had VentureCat 2019. I want to ask you to tell us what that is, and then we maybe we can go through some of the different ideas that came out.
Yeah, so VentureCat is the annual student startup competition at Northwestern. It's a collaboration between a number of different groups at the university, but it's hosted by The Garage, and I am the MC. You know, we started with about 75 teams that applied. We whittled it down to about 26 teams that participated in the semifinals. And then the first place winners went on to compete in front of a live audience of over 300 people, the live stream at the Kellogg Global Hub, to compete for the grand prize money. So in total, we gave away over $100,000 in prize money.
Yeah, and this is kind of cool. If people are listening and they haven't seen this before, it's really high pressure. You go on stage, the audience are business gurus. Talk to us a little bit about how that atmosphere not only takes shape as you watch it, but impacts the students.
We were really fortunate this year in that John McNeil, who's the current chief operating officer of Lyft, served as our keynote. He's an alum and he came back and talked about, you know, the importance of entrepreneurship and innovation, having that spirit and kind of some of the historical facts from Northwestern. It's a big main stage. I mean, it's, bright lights and cameras. We're doing a live stream at the same time and broadcasting that around the world to alums and investors that want to participate. But it's a grueling day for the finalists because first they have to kind of pitch in a very intimate classroom setting with judges that have deep expertise in their area. Then they move to a round with finals judges, which is also a closed door session. And these are, venture capitalists and entrepreneurs from around the Chicago area. And they get grilled for 18 minutes of Q&A. So you really have to know everything about your business, your industry, your numbers, and then right immediately after that, they go to the final stage, which is this audience of 300 people and bright lights and cameras, and it's a really high pressure day in three completely different settings.
Let's talk about some of the winners. One of the bigger winners was Presight. Is the name of the venture?
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Presight was our grand prize winner this year. So this was co-founded by a Kellogg MBA student and a Kellogg MBA and Feinberg MD student. So she's an MD MBA. There's only about 30 or so in that program at a time, and their idea was around. I don't want to flub it up too bad, but it's really around, there's a really invasive eye test that they do on premature infants to check for some health in the eye. Mm-hmm. And they found a way to do it by just testing the teardrops instead of putting a probe and device into an infant's eye.
Yeah, this technology, if it comes to market, when it comes to market, I won't say if because when, it's very cool.
Yeah.
That's a very painful procedure for little children to go through.
Yeah, it's hard for the babies. It's really, emotionally tough for the parents, even for the physicians that administer the test. They don't enjoy doing it. And so what this competition allows them to take that to what's called a bench study. So they won over $35,000 in prize money, all non-dilutive capital, and that will really get this them to allow to validate this idea and make sure that it can go to market.
We're learning with you with this conversation this morning. You said something, bench study.
Yes.
What is that? What is that?
I'm not 100% sure. I think in a medical device, this is something that they pitched on stage at
okay.
VentureCat.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe it's the next phase for a medical device or technology to do a study to make sure that the proposed innovation is viable.
$30,000 as somebody who started their own business. Talk to us about how big that is for a company.
I think that's a make or break it. You have to look at a lot of these are students. They've been in the classroom part time and then working on their startup part-time. And this is, kind of a little bit of money that will get them out of academia and out into the real world, maybe before they raise their first round of angel funding or venture capital funding, or even get a bank loan. I mean, this is hiring a first employee, getting an office space, traveling to conferences, buying your first product. There's a lot you can do with $30,000 if you're a scrappy entrepreneur in the early days.
Well, what are some of the other winners? And tell us a little bit about them, if you can.
Some of the other finalists we had on stage this year, one was called Slate. So it was a marketplace for tattoo artists and those looking to get a new tattoo. There was Limelight, which is a small sticker wearable, sensor that you can put on a plant, and it can detect how much light the plant is getting. So right now, I guess in the industry, the sensors are very large and can only look at a large swath of an indoor farm, but this can go all the way down to the plant level.
Oh, that's nice.
So that's pretty interesting. Their first beachhead market that they pitched was cannabis, which has just become very relevant
right,
here in Illinois.
Very relevant. Very, very cool to think about all of these different ideas. How much of a role do you have in do they come and ask you questions because they know your background? And what are kinds of conversations go on?
So at the Garage in general, a lot of people provide what are called office hours, an academic term that we've borrowed for industry. So any student can set up kind of a half an hour conversation with myself, anyone on our staff. We have a number of people who are called entrepreneurs in residence. So they've started companies. They have a desk at the Garage where they're working on their next project. But we have an early co-founder of Grubhub, someone who sold a company to Groupon. The co-founders of Peapod just joined on. We have a healthcare expert. We have an investor. And so they're there to do these office hours with students and provide kind of expertise and guidance for their ventures. And any student at Northwestern can sign up for those, whether they're part of the Garage or VentureCat or not.
What is young people, students especially, do when they don't have something like the Garage?
You know, I think there was always a lot of entrepreneurial activity on Northwestern's campus, and I'm sure this is true of all college campuses. Students are resourceful, so they work on projects in their dorm room. They take a class. Maybe they'll go work at a coffee shop afterwards. If they're in a big city, they can go to a co-working space. So I think students will always find a way, but there's something really powerful about giving them a physical space that they can all occupy together, because that allows them to form a community. And I think one of the greatest assets of the Garage is that community of founders and the relationships that those students form with each other to kind of encourage each other and see each other through with their ventures.
How big is the gender gap in the entrepreneurial space?
Yeah, so our first year, about 25% of the students that came to the Garage were women. Through a number of efforts, we got that number up to about a third by our second and third year, and then it really leveled off and flatlined. So we showed documentary films, we brought in more women founders, we reached out to the student groups on campus, but we just couldn't break that number. And this year, we created a new program, thanks to a philanthropic gift, called the Propel Program, which is specifically to encourage more women to take the plunge into working on new ideas. And the idea of this is for what we've seen in some of the research is that women tend to think that they need more skills or classes before working on a new idea, where the guys just kind of show up in droves and start working on it. So this was a program to give women some additional funding and support and mentorship to encourage them to bring their ideas and to start working on them.
There's also a financial part of this too, a little financial assistance. And in addition to the mentorship, I'm guessing that financial assistance is in this form of scholarships and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a stipend for their project, so they can get up to $1,000 in funding. It can be for really anything, materials, traveling to a conference, you name it. And what that'll, even though it's a small amount of money, it's up to $1,000. So some students only take, $200-$300. But it's that with entrepreneurship, it's always about putting one foot in front of the other. And I think that really helps students do that legwork and think about what are the next steps I need to do and what can I do to move this idea forward.
You mentioned some of the founders who have gone through the program, and you have wonderful experts at Kellogg that are involved too. Has the local business community been helpful to the Garage?
This has been for the Propel program specifically, this has been our first year. Mm-hmm. But we have done a lot working with the city of Evanston for a number of our businesses. For example, there's a recent alum out of Kellogg who opened a restaurant called Vietnam Nom. He started on campus, did a lot of catering, and he opened up his first brick and mortar location in Evanston.
Yeah. There's also some fellowships available. Talk to us a little bit about how that pulls people into the program.
Yeah, so again, any student can come to the Garage, but we have these programs depending on kind of different circumstances. So the Little Joe Ventures Fellowship Program, which is also from a philanthropic gift, we try to identify students during their sophomore year of study. It's for five students. We take nominations from across the campus, and those students are given opportunities to meet people, have experiences, and do some curriculum that they would not have access to otherwise. So, for example, we took these students to tour SpaceX in Los Angeles. We also had lunch with Gwyneth Paltrow and heard about her founding Goop. Mm-hmm. Experiences like that are just once-in-a-lifetime things. And I hope that this, opens up the minds of these students and really lets them see that, the stars in the sky are the limit.
Yeah, literally and figuratively, especially with Gwyneth Paltrow. The SpaceX thing, for me, would be the cool thing. I think anybody who's interested in space and rockets, that would be kind of cool. If you maybe even go and press the button to launch one of them, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah, I think we had to call in favors, I think, to get on the floor. But if you ever have the opportunity to go out there, and it is mind-boggling to walk that floor, and they're you think they'd be behind glass. They're just making rocket parts, right next to you. It's amazing.
Earlier in the interview, I mentioned that you were on the Mayor's Technology Council. Yep. We've just brought in our first black female mayor, We have a new mayor. I guess the big question is, the Technology Council at Chicago's Next going to continue, and will you continue serving on that?
I hope so. The new deputy mayor is an alum of Northwestern, and he's an entrepreneur himself, so I hope that he understands the importance of continuing to support and nurture the ecosystem here in Chicago. Like I said earlier, I think Chicago has a ton of potential, and we're just starting to see it now. I've seen another trend in a lot of tech companies are setting up satellite offices here in Chicago at a quicker pace than I've seen over the last couple of years. So that's really exciting. And I think that that'll help invigorate not only the existing technology companies, but also the ecosystem of startups that are around here.
Our conversation has been very positive. There's a lot to be hopeful about. Are there any headwinds blowing into this space that you're in?
I think one of the only things that still is a little disappointing is the number of students. For me, is for the number of students that leave Chicago and do head to the coast. They go to, you know, they go to Silicon Valley, or they go to New York, they go to Seattle. And I think part of it is that there's just a lack of awareness of what the opportunities are here in Chicago. The tech companies and consulting companies are very good at coming to campus and selling the dream and recruiting those students. So I'd love to see more ways for Chicago to holistically bring those opportunities to students so they understand that there's a ton of wonderful opportunities for them here, right here in Chicago.
Is there anything that the media could be doing differently? Are we covering this the wrong way?
I don't think so. I think the more you can do to just promote some of the early stage startups in the city, that's always a wonderful thing to do. Something that gives me hope is that I think of the student teams that we've seen continue right after graduation and work on their startups full time. About 90% of them are staying here in Chicago, and not as many of them are fleeing to the coast. So that gives me hope, too, that there's kind of these smaller, earlier stage startups are willing to stay here.
Do you have any sense of what's in the pike? Have you already seen some ideas that are in the garage being worked on that maybe you can share a little bit of details on or a sneak peek?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two of our semifinalists, even from VentureCat, that have been part of the garage that are doing great things right now. So one is called PedalCell. They won our audience vote at a post-VentureCat event that we did at MHub, and they're working on a technology that provides all of the harnesses the kinetic energy of a bike to power smart bikes. And their product will be available in a bike that is sold at Costco over the summer. And then another one, just last week, a student launched a company called Scoots, which is pineapple for your feet. So they are one of the first plant-based shoe companies. Oh. They just launched their Kickstarter, and you can check them out online.
When students come up with these ideas and they're working them, you've mentioned quite a few of them, and they realize they have a big thing. Do they keep working on their education? How do you have that conversation with them when they think, okay, I'm going to go make a lot of money now? How do you keep them in school?
Yeah, so no one has dropped out for their startup yet. I should caveat that. I'm sure it'll happen at some point. You know, these are really high achieving people, and they figure out a way that they can balance their academics and their startup at the same time. It's not always easy. Sometimes it requires a co-founder. Sometimes it requires taking time off from school. Sometimes it requires, you know, doing independent studies on their startup. But students are creative and good at finding ways that they can kind of balance both. But it's a huge challenge.
Why is the academic part so important?
Well, I mean, the reason that they're at Northwestern is to get an education. So I think that should be their priority. You know, I believe that what they're working on in their extracurricular time in these startup projects is also part of their education, how they're going to learn, how does an entrepreneur think and act in this world. My hope for all of the students is that they do learn that mindset. The garage is not about churning out startups. We've been fortunate in that some real companies have come out of it, but we're not Y Combinator or Techstars. Our goal is really around teaching, you know, all students at Northwestern to have an entrepreneurial mindset, be able to use that for whatever career path they choose.
So what does the future bring for the garage, or what do you want from the garage in the future?
Yeah, one of the things I'm most excited about is we're opening a small satellite location called the Sardine Bar. It's in the former home of the Gold Star Sardine Bar, which was a cabaret bar which was open until the 90s in Chicago. And we're in the process of converting that space to a small innovation workspace for our students on the downtown campus, which is our medical students, our law students, and some of our Kellogg students.
Very nice. Well, Melissa, thank you for coming in today. All the best to everybody at the garage, and please come back and see us.
Great. Thank you.
Melissa Kaufman, Executive Director of the Garage at Northwestern University. We're going to continue our conversation with Melissa after the bell this morning and post more of our conversation online. You can listen to that when the podcast hits a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. They're called deep fake videos. Videos where faces and audio have been manipulated by technology, and there's a growing chance that they could be used in the upcoming presidential campaign that's really just getting underway. Joining us this morning to talk a little bit about this and what's being done to find them and fight them is Edward Delp, a director of Video and Imaging Processing Laboratory at Purdue University. Edward, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. We appreciate you being on with us this morning. Talk to us a little bit first about, again, what we're talking about here. I think some of us have seen some of these deep fake videos and news stories. Give us a sense of how well they're done and how they're being spread out around the world.
Well, I mean, I think that the term deep fakes is, in many ways, it's not a technical term. It's a term that has become used in our society for any type of manipulated image or video content. It also could apply to audio. In particular, the work we're doing, we're looking at a particular type of video manipulation where the video is manipulated using certain types of tools from machine learning to make fake video. In particular, the ones we were concentrating on were videos that were done using were face swapping videos, where you would try to insert somebody else's face into the video. And I think, you know, there's a lot of other simpler video manipulation tools that are out there. And, you know, I think we recently saw one of these with this Nancy Pelosi video, this, you know, the Speaker of the House, where that really, in a sense, wasn't a deep fake. That was using more what I would call classical video manipulation techniques.
Yeah, one of the deep fakes I'm thinking about, I think a lot of people may have seen this one, was the President Obama and a person on the right who was a comedian. And they had he was doing Mr. Obama's voice, and the end result looked almost real.
Yes, yeah, I mean, those are types of techniques that, again, use these machine learning techniques, in particular a type of machine learning known as deep learning.
So as we you know, move forward here, the chance of these things popping up is probably going to grow, right? If we're heading into the presidential election, the threat of that. I mean, I can imagine if we open up TV one morning and we saw a candidate, you mentioned Nancy Pelosi there, but it's something more sophisticated, saying they want a tax increase or they want to do this or that, that seems contrary, that could spread pretty quickly. Talk to us about the threat here.
Well, I mean, I think these tools are available. There is a particular tool that actually is called deepfakes that's available for free on the internet. Anybody can download it and use it, and you can make a fake video. And so I think people are going to be definitely doing this. You know, this is not, in many ways, this is not anything new. People have been faking, you know, images for more than 100 years. And so the problem, though, of course, is the tools are becoming very readily available, and they're not too hard to use. Now, the problem, of course, is going to be the quality of, you know, what types of fake videos are created. Some of them are really very bad, and you can spot them. But other ones that people that take more time and are a little bit more sophisticated in their knowledge, though, should be able to make some pretty decent fake videos. And there's other implications other than just the you know, the political area. I mean, you know, there are other areas of concern where people might use these.
The thing that is new is how you're finding them. And you're working on that with some students at Purdue University, sort of fighting artificial intelligence and machine learning with artificial intelligence and machine learning. Talk to us a little bit about how you're finding ways to find these videos a little bit more easily.
Yeah, we've developed some tools that are able to detect some of these manipulated videos, these deepfake videos. And this is a project we've been working on for more than a year. And again, as you mentioned, you know, we are sort of using AI to fight these things. We have developed some other deep learning approaches to allow us to be able to detect if a video is manipulated or not. And our technique also, as the manipulations get better and we can have more access to them, our system will actually learn and be able to detect the techniques. you know, in many ways, this is going to be an arms race. You know, you're going to have people who are making these things and people like my group that are interested in being able to detect them. So it's going to be a continuing, you know, sort of chase for the coming future.
And so where will all this come out in the wash, Edward? Will we have some sort of device that will be able to help all of us spot these things in the future, or where? How will this work?
I think in the future, there, you know, you will have tools to be able to do this. I also think there'll be a lot of content providers that might be providing these types of tools. Like, perhaps, and again, I'm not speaking for any of these companies, but, you know, I could see a company like Facebook or Google, you know, with YouTube, could maybe have tools that, you know, as these videos would get uploaded on their platforms, they could use these tools to label a particular video as maybe being suspect. You know, it's also possible that some content providers may provide these types of tools. So I think in the future there will be tools available that people will be able to detect these types of things. Unfortunately, they're not available to the general public at this time, but I think that's coming.
You caught the attention of the Department of Defense. You've got a grant, I believe, or you won at least a prize from DARPA, which is the cool new technology organization. Are we talking about nation states here that are going to be able to do this the best, and so we as a nation state have to fight it that way?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for DARPA. I mean, we have a grant from the Department of Defense as part of DARPA, and we're working on this. We've been working on this problem. You know, we've had a grant from DARPA for 3 years. We've been working on this problem, this particular problem, for about a little bit more than a year. I think you're going to, you know, the fact of the matter is the more tools, the more money you have, the more computation you have, the more access you have to some of these sophisticated things, you know, the better you're going to be able to make, make these manipulated videos. And so, you know, the more resources they have, the better you're going to do. Now, on the other hand, the more resources you have to detect them, you're going to do a better job at detecting them.
You mentioned the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi video where the video made it look like she was drunk. Facebook has not taken that down yet, even though they know that it's not a real video or that it's been manipulated. That's kind of part of the conversation too, isn't it? These organizations, when confronted with fake videos, need to act on them, don't they?
Well, I mean, this is a policy decision that these companies have to make. You know, I'm a technical guy. I don't do those types of things. You know, we're interested in providing tools so people can be able to detect these things. But, you know, I think those are conversations those companies need to have, not only with inside themselves, but also with the users of their platform.
So what do you do next? If you had to have your choice of wherever you wanted to study this or work on this, what would be the thing that you'd want to tackle more quickly?
Well, I mean, we're continuing to look at this problem, and these videos are getting, better and better. I mean, some of the if you looked at carefully at some of the earlier ones, particularly ones using this machine learning approach, they didn't do a very good job of things like eye blinking and things like that. They're getting better at that. So now we are looking at models for being able to detect whether, you know, there's eye blinking, and there's a few other techniques we're looking at to be able to identify whether or not the particular video has been manipulated. So we're continuing to work on the problem, and, you know, our methods are getting better. We have some learning techniques that are built into our methods, so we're continuing to work on it.
Well, Edward, we appreciate you being with us this morning and sharing some of your research.
Sure.
And work with us. Thank you.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Edward Dell, Director of the Video and Imaging Processing Laboratory over at Purdue University.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains later on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 111 points this morning, nearly a half a percent. S&P and NASDAQ futures up about a third. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Markets may be settling down a little bit this morning because of the decision on the trade situation with Mexico and the United States. The United States and Mexico struck a deal on Friday to avert a tariff war, with Mexico agreeing to rapidly expand the controversial asylum program and deploy security forces to stem the flow of illegal Central American migrants. And that kept the markets in turmoil on Friday. As a matter of fact, my Board of Trade screen and my Mercantile Exchange screen a solid red, with the wheat crop down 6.5 cents, the July corn down 4.75 on Friday, and July soybeans down 13.25. We were down the $3 daily limit on hog futures in July and August and October and December Friday, and live cattle and feeder cattle futures fell as well. In the early overnight trade, it's trading a little bit lower on corn because the feeling is we will get better planting figures in the afternoon report today. Also keep in mind that today is the first weekly report of the U.S. conditions ratings for the 2019 corn crop. That'll be out from USDA today. And then in closing, I have to mention a party at the Gobert Pumpkin Farm, the folks who did Pumpkin Fest, and we joined them on WGN. A big party to celebrate Jim Gobert's 90th birthday. In good health to enjoy it. So happy birthday to Jim, and thanks to he and Esther for a magnificent birthday party last night. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple more stories before we leave you this morning. Finance ministers and central bank chiefs of the group of 20 major economies have wrapped up a meeting in Japan with a pledge to use all the policies they can to protect global growth. The G20 finance leaders said in a joint communique that risks from trade and geopolitical tensions were intensifying. The leaders said that despite the risk, global growth appears to be stabilizing. They expected it to pick up later this year and next. The Canadian government plans to announce it's moving to ban single-use plastics as early as 2021. Senior government official says that the announcement will come later today officially. The official says specific items to be banned will be determined based on a science-based review, but they are considering items such as water bottles, plastic bags, and even straws. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Monday, June the 10th. The job opening and labor turnover numbers for April lead off this week's economics reports. Analysts see job numbers continuing their recovery from February's 9-month low. The forecast is for 7.4 million openings in April, down slightly from March. Also today on the calendar, a couple of earnings, Lakeland Industries, Feral Gas Partners, Shiloh Industries, Supercom, and Thor Industries, all reporting quarterly earnings. As we look ahead to the rest of the week, tomorrow we'll see Dave and Buster earnings. The Tesla shareholders meeting is tomorrow. The E3 Gaming Conference begins Wednesday. We'll see inflation data as well as oil inventories on Thursday. We'll see an OPEC report and also German inflation data. And then on Friday, U.S. and Chinese retail sales and consumer sentiment numbers from the University of Michigan. So plenty of things that could move the markets for the week and today on this Monday, June the 10th.